Translation. In the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. In this way, 20 years are wasted. Similarly, in old age, when one is an invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. Some say this is a pessimistic outlook of the transcendentalists on material life. So one says the devotees of the transcendentalists, they are pessimistic, maybe rightfully so, about material existence, because Krishna says, Abhrama Bhuvana Loka, from the topmost planet to the lowest places of repeated birth and death is the places of misery. Of course, so materially speaking, the devotees or the transcendentalists are pessimistic, but spiritually speaking, they are optimistic. And that's maybe where we truly should put our hopes, our optimism. So in that way, these verses here, in a way, teach us to be whatever, cautious, not to spend our time wastefully. Of course, then we could also walk around and be very dark and gloomy, unhappy, dissatisfied, because in any case, what's the use of living, maybe someone thinks. A little bit like a Christian priest, in a way of, sometimes when I see Christian priests at least in the Eastern countries, the Orthodox priest or something, they come with a very heavy black coat. So say you get a feeling of some darkness is connected with this priest. So the devotees, even though they have this pessimistic outlook on existence, they're very bright, or they're light in a way, because they have a different goal of existence. So we can see here's a description of how life should not be lived, so to say. At the same time, if you have children, well, they're going to play. And I don't know what they do when they're teenagers, even if they're devotees, doesn't mean they're the greatest saints. At least not the greatest saints, just a little bit. But all kind of things happens. And then the devotees get married, and their family, and there's so many activities. So some Krishna is there, but someone may think that it should be better. Because then we get here, life is lived, and then we get old, and then we should be great transcendentalists. But the question is if we all make the mark, so to say, in that degree. But it gives a description. One should not waste life. So maybe my question is how to live life in such a way that it does not get wasted. And in one sense, I think Krishna is a good example, because he lived, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He appeared 5,000 years ago, and instead of staying in the town, he went to the village with the cowherd man and woman and had a good time in the forest. he didn't go to school, at least not at that point. It's quite a nice lifestyle, I would say. But in that way, maybe he learned more. Well, no, he knows everything, but in one sense, I choose to take it as a way of a prototype for the good childhood. There's a way of loving parents who takes care of the child, very loving and caring, concerned. But even though they're loving and caring, they doesn't. they send out the child to herd the calves in the forest along with his friends. So that way, in a natural way, they learn how to do things under the direction of the parents, and they're let out there in the forest with the calves, and there in the forest have a good time learning how all the birds, the sounds of all the birds, where the different minerals are, and what the different flowers are. There's so many things to learn out there, or to figure out. And this, they all learn in a very playful way. So one thing we can say, if the child is playing, some say that the playing is, it could be seen as a waste of time, but it could also be a way of learning. So if it becomes the playing could be a way through which you can learn. So in the modern time, we see playing just as being, you know, okay, we just give the, maybe, did I say, see? Okay, here's the students coming. Playing as just being an entertainment to keep them busy with something so they don't cause a nuisance. But actually playing as a way of learning should be. Playing should be, the learning should be playful, and the play should be a way of learning. Yes. And Narada Muni, of course, then we think, oh, they're just, you know, just playing. Narada Muni, in the description of Narada Muni in his childhood, before he met the Sadhya, so while he met the Sadhya, so he made a small note there, that he was not, something like he was not frivolous and playing around. He was very kind of, well, nice behaved little boy. And that way, the sadhus, maybe that qualified him to interact with the sadhus in a nice way and render some service and eventually getting some of their prasadam. And thus he was awakened to his the spiritual quest. So in that way, they were saying he was like self-control, he was not frivolous, but he was a nice little boy. Then in modern time, we may think, well, how do we get the kids to be like that? Well, I read one lady who, well, okay, I take that aspect in here because Maria Montessori, she had her way of educating the kids. And I read some description about those kids who actually was under her care. And when I thought that, well, that sounds quite nice, because they had an experiment. Okay, you have a room, and you have a table with all kind of toys. The two groups of kids let in there, one group and another group. One group came in and just like took the toys and started to play around. But the other group came in and like kind of looked very, well, soberly, peacefully, and okay, what's this a little bit? So that sounded like a group of students that were very, like, well, they were not carried away or like that, but they were in a way self-controlled. So, of course, the other concept was what she used. Okay, that's the second group that was what was educated by this lady. So that I gave, well, that sounded a little bit more like that, developed a little bit the quality of Narada Muni in his previous life, yes. As a child, being not frivolous or like that, self-controlled. But the other point was that the play is not a waste of time. It shouldn't be a waste of time. It should be a way of learning. So when the playing is a way of learning, then it's not a waste of time. And then it gives a meaning to life. And then if there's a meaning to life, then the child may feel more satisfied. You know, he has a meaningful part. There's meaning to the existence. They're learning something and in some way being a meaningful part of existence. That also, on our farm projects where I'm staying, we have a lot of kids now. There's about 28 of them. We're very productive there. So that is interesting to see, well, the kids and the parents figure out, well, if the kids are employed with them while they're doing something, that's a nice way of the kids doing something, the parents are doing something, the kids want to imitate, and then the kids or the children are there and along with the parents doing things, and that's the way learning things, actually in a playful way. So that way, the point is, we should not waste time. It should not be a frivolous play, but a play where something meaningful is accomplished. Okay, so for the children, I would say the play should be work, something that brings up. But then for the adults, maybe our work should be a play. Because nowadays, everything is so, you know, okay, here's a description. Of course, there's a teenager also. Engage in sporting and playing, but it could also be a way of developing their skills and to learn things, to progress. But then we get to adulthood, and as a modern society is, it's a society of sense gratification. It is a way fruitive mentality, or actually impersonalistic mentality, and a mentality, the only thing that matters is sense gratification. So we work, but the work, we go to the office or wherever we go, and or we don't go anywhere, whatever we do, as basically it's a matter of earning money. Earning money in order to actually then enjoy or do something meaningful. So the job, in that sense, becomes meaningless. The only purpose is to earn money, and then you can do something fun. So in the old times, as far as I understand, the was not exactly like that, or at least maybe that's a combination. But you did your duty, or there was a duty to be performed, and that was like had like a higher purpose, because in the Vedic society we speak about dharma, doing your dharma. Well, it's being a mother or a father or a, whatever, carpenter or something, you do your dharma, and it has a meaning to it on a different level. But if it's just a matter of doing something to earn money, then it's like has lost its value. It's, we can say, doesn't really matter if you do it or not, you just do it because it get money. That's not very meaningful engagement. So therefore I say, maybe the work should be a play. In a way, it should be something fun, meaningful, that makes life worth living. The work itself, and then we don't need so much games or other things to say make us happy, because the work should make us happy, satisfied. In one sense, life, I should live a meaningful life, so if there's meaningful activities and satisfying activities, well, we can say that's a meaningful life, and that's not then we're not wasting our life. Of course, now here, if in that way live, or that's my vision, how life should be lived, in a meaningful way, in a happy way, serving Krishna or doing our duties for the pleasure of the Lord, and then living together in a happy way. That's like when Krishna, Pritam Raj was making his horse sacrifices, okay. So now Indra became very upset and became envious. Maybe he's going to take over my position. Okay, so Indra interfered with the whole thing. But at the end of the story, it all well that ends well. And at the end of the story, Indra and Prithviraj dance together happily as brothers. There's a description like that. And actually, Narayan, the Supreme Lord, comes himself and visits the sacrifice. But he is so pleased with the affectionate relationship that is then developed between Indra and Prithviraj, that he like stays a little bit longer, because he appreciates the love and care between them, or their brotherly affectionate relationship. So we can see that is something that attracts Krishna. So that way we could also say a meaningful life would also mean that we have meaningful relationships. I mean, nice, affectionate, or appropriate relationships. Without that, it becomes empty. Just living for myself. We can say that's a modern society, at least in Sweden. Everyone has their own flat or their own room, and it's very much separated. There's so many families, what's a single, what do you call a single, single families, where there's only a mother, only a father and kids, there's not even a husband and wife together. So that's kind of empty. There's no relationship. And then also, what makes life meaningful is if, okay, just to live for myself, that's really, it's not really a meaningful thing. When to live for someone, so either it's your cat or your dog, your cows, your oxen, your wife, your husband, maybe your guru, your fellow friends in the community. But without the relationship, it's not satisfying, or at least, because we can be impersonally, so to say, just take shelter of Krishna. But of course, then immediately we have Krishna, then we have his devotees also. And so when we're serving Krishna together as devotees, that's not a waste of time. Whereas the materialistic, impersonalistic society and concept of life actually makes things meaningless and we become isolated and unhappy. And then maybe we want to take shelter of some kind of impersonal void where we can, so to say, feel some peace. So that way, let's see. The play. Also, it's beautiful to see the deities. I see everything. Very nice. Looks. Someone will always find some fault somewhere. Okay. But that is like the material existence. There's so many good things, but I managed to find a fault there. Okay. So that is maybe the challenge is to find the good things where there's full of fault as well. We should look for the good things. Of course, there may be discrepancies, but in this material existence, even when we're trying to execute our devotional service nicely like that, eventually we will fail in one place or one way or another. We will most probably fail. In the end of the 18th chapter, Krishna says, towards the end there, that, every endeavor is covered by some fault, just like fire is covered by smoke. Because when the fire is strong, there may hardly be any smoke, but if you really, really want to find the smoke, you will find it. So in this world, there will be faults. It's not perfect like that. And perfection maybe is not that we do something faultlessly, but rather that we try to do it with love and care for the sake of pleasing Krishna. There will be mistakes, so there will be shortcomings, and that we should have, oversee. Okay, so we are worshipping the deities, we're dressing them, we are having flowers and all kind of things, and it looks very beautiful. And it looks very beautiful because it's a beautiful combination of colors and flowers and jewelry. So that way, I thought of like the perfection in all kind of perfection is a matter of taking different things and put them together and make something beautiful out of it. In one sense, to put together things in a harmonious way. So we put together the decorations and the colors so it looks harmonious with the flower vases. Or maybe we are a carpenter or whatever we are. We are building something. We put together different things in a way that it looks nice and harmonious and becomes useful. Or when we cook, it's a matter of taking different items and putting them together in a nice way. Now understanding what goes together with what. So it can be used nicely and make a nice offering to Krishna. When maybe opposites, putting together opposites or differences and combine it in a nice offering to Krishna. So that also could be like for the, the managers or the kshatriyas or whatever we call them. the challenge is to put together different people to do or different devotees to make a nice things together. So understand what goes together with what. Put it together nicely so that you can serve Krishna. Put it together so that they can serve Krishna nicely. So that's interesting. But I would say that it's actually an art. It's all an art. I could say a play. Maybe if you take too seriously, we just go according to the school book, but that's okay. The school book may give us a certain ideas, but then it's a matter for us to finding, using our own whatever creative side or intuitive side to find where is this and what is that, and put it together in a nice way so it can be useful for Krishna and for the devotees. Therefore I say the whole thing is not mechanical or impersonal, but rather it's personal and attention, and maybe one need to use some imagination. Of course, we shouldn't speculate, okay? That's clear. I would say speculation is forbidden. But if you're creative and imaginative, visualizing and, understanding how to put it together, we need some creativity or using the mind in a nice way so that they can come out nice combinations in various ways for the service of the Lord. And that, maybe I would say, in a playful way, not necessarily, not too serious. Of course, we shouldn't also be too, if we're just frivolous, laughing, and that should be a result of the play. Not just a waste of time, but now then out of it should come something beautiful. So in the same way, so the child should grow up and maybe playing and learning things in that way, and the end result should be a beautiful person, beautiful, or responsible or qualified person who can contribute to society in a happy way and serve Krishna. Of course, then we get, and then being that, then we get to the other side of the story here. Prahlad Maharaj has the childhood, the youth, and then in between there, and then now we're getting to the old people. Similarly, in old age, when one is an invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. So, of course, that is interesting for us as devotees, as Prabhupada's disciples, that we're getting a little bit older, let's say, and that's a challenge to, let's say, live a life as a devotee in a meaningful way in the old age, in the older age, when the external activities, we can't exactly jump and dance maybe in the same way as before. So in a community where there needs the elders also have the position. So in order the experience, the life experience and the maturity by which they have to give some guidance or direction for the younger generation, guidance or directions, or just simply inspiration. Like Sukadeva Goswami, when he came to Parikshit Maharaj, it was said that he was blessed with old age. But he was not old, as far as we understand, or had it gone many years. No, he was blessed with old age. The explanation was being blessed with old age means he was wise. He had knowledge, realization. So that is a challenge, to live a life in a nice way, in a proper way, so that we become realized and mature, and then in the old age can, so to say, transfer or share that to the younger generations. And that way, it's not a waste. We're not wasting our time. It is becoming a meaningful, the old age becomes a meaningful age. So actually, it's stated some places that unless we become wise, we're not really old yet. And that's maybe sometimes we can see old people in the material world who maybe don't, I don't know what's going on in the mind, but that we're just spending the time in sense gratification and things. And thus, in the old age, yes, it becomes very, we say, lamentable, because there's nothing there, or not so much there in terms of understanding or realization. And that's maybe, specifically in a modern time when the old people are maybe put away in old people's home and other places where they, so to say, lose contact with a living society. So I would say that the old people are like just put away somewhere. Well, they're not of use anymore. Or maybe the kids also just put them away and entertain them some way, put them in front of the TV or the computer or something, so they're not in the way. So that is in a way, in a rude way, or it's, you know, it's not meaningful, and it's actually counterproductive for the progress of the human society, of the human beings. So in the one way or another, we learn to love Krishna. That's also what I understood with the kids, with the children. That's on our farm communities, where we had one thing. One consultation, there was a consultation, or there was a letter on the future of the farm, or the future of the community. And then we became very clear that at one point it looked like the kids were not really interested in the whole thing. You know, we're doing it very seriously, but the kids were not interested. But when we put the kids more in the center, then actually it became meaningful. The children became more interested, and it actually became meaningful. So actually for a community, it looked meaningful to put the children in the center so that they can be part, not be something separate, but a part of the whole, and thus grow, and thus the whole community grow. And that we could also say that the materialistic, the impersonalistic way of looking things separates things. So we can separate it. And in one sense, when it's separated, it loses its meaning. But when it's put together in a nice way, then it becomes meaningful. And that is the point with the flowers on the altar. Well, of course, you can just have one kind of flowers also. But it's nice, you have a little bit red and a little bit white and maybe blue or other things. And then it becomes more beautiful. So that way, we should, in a meaningful way, put the different aspects together to make a beautiful community as an offering to Krishna. And that way, our life will not be wasted, but it will be a meaningful life of service to Krishna, of association with devotees and other human beings. And maybe they're not only human beings, maybe also the animals. That is also, we can see, we have a hard time in our society. Now we are doing something here, we're going on. That's very nice. But otherwise, we have a very difficult time to relate to the cows and the oxen. I mean, to take, you know, how to relate with them. In one sense, because not only human society, well, even more so in relationship to the animals, we have been separated from the animals. They're just something abstract or something. So we don't know really how to deal with animals. We don't know how to use. I mean, on our farm, and here you're using the oxen and like that. But on our farm, we're like scratching our head. What we're going to do, so to say. But there is a will and there's a way. But we'll, by the technology, we become, so to say, separated from, in one sense, I would say, from reality. Whereas what our forefathers just one or two generations ago knew how to do, we don't know. Because, in a way, through the technology, from the industrialization, we have been separated from the tradition. So that the animals is also part. The various kind of animals. So maybe you have a cat, and then there's a rats, and there's a dogs and birds out here. And in one way, they all fill a function. They all meant to be part of a greater whole. And then we have the earth and the trees and the bushes and the plants and everything. It's all a part of Krishna's creation. And maybe for us as human beings, the challenge is to take all these different things and put them together nicely so that it becomes a nice offering to Krishna. Because that's what we are meant to do, make a sacrifice for Krishna. Make a sacrifice for Krishna, make something that is pleasing to Krishna. And if it's pleasing to Krishna, then we will also be pleased because we are part and parcel of Krishna. But if you're not, if you are, so to say, wasting our time, well, we will not be happy. Krishna will not be happy. We will not be happy. Maybe shortly, sense gratification will satisfy a little bit, but just to live a life of sense gratification is not meaningful. It's empty. So then the go for more sense gratification, more sense gratification. But when are they satisfied? Never. So they end up as alcoholics and whatever, drug addicts. So when the sense gratification will not make us happy, but meaningful, when there's a meaningful life of service to Krishna, and when there's a meaningful life, there's meaning, then also the craving for sense gratification or just material stimulation will not be the same. Because when we are satisfied on a deeper level, now we don't need these external things so much. I say so much, maybe something, but in any case, you know, at one point it is, so then when we get to the grand old age of 100 years or something, whatever, you know, we're satisfied within and be happy just thinking of Krishna, meditating and chanting. And even though, you know, the body will not cooperate so much, hopefully the mind will be clear so that we can serve the Lord. So thus, it's a challenge for us to perfect our life. We should not waste time. At the same time, it's not a morbid or just, oh, it's all bad or useless, but rather take the different aspects and use it nicely for the service of Krishna. And thus create a beautiful offering to the Lord, and that can just expand then. Offering of the whole globe in the service of Krishna, for the service, for the pleasure of Krishna. Okay. Yes, yes, that 70 out of 100 years are wasted by a person who does not know the aim of life and how to utilize the human form. So thus, we could say something like 70 out of 100 years are usefully used by a person who does know the aim of life and how to utilize this human form of life. And it should be nicely used, our human life, satisfactory. And then people will be attracted, say, let's join. Let's join the fun of serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna. Okay, maybe I have some question or comment. Yes.